Chapter 7, Uninvited Brothers. Omri was not allowed to ride his bicycle in the road, but then he wasn't supposed to ride it on the pavement either, not fast at any rate, so he compromised. He rode it slowly, on the pavement, as far as the corner, then bumped down off the curb and went like the wind. The hardware shop was still open. He bought the seed tray and the seeds and was just paying for them when he noticed something. On the seed packet, under the word marrow, was written another word in brackets. Squash. So, one of the three sisters was marrow. On impulse, he asked the shopkeeper, "Do you know what maize is?"
"Maize, son? That's sweet corn, isn't it?"
"Have you some seeds of that?" Outside, standing by Omri's bike, was Patrick. "Hi."
"Hi. I saw you going in. What'd you get?"
Omri showed him.
"More presents for the Indian?" Patrick asked sarcastically.
"Well, sort of. If..."
"If what?"
"If I can keep him long enough, till they grow." Patrick stared at him and Omri stared back.
"I've been to Yap's," said Patrick. "I bought you something."
"Yeah?
What?" asked Omri hopefully.
Slowly, Patrick took his hand out of his pocket, held it in front of him and opened the fingers. In his palm lay a cowboy on a horse, with a pistol in one hand pointing upward, or what would have been upward if it hadn't been lying on its side. Omri looked at it silently. Then he shook his head.
"I'm sorry. I don't want it."
"Why not? Now you can play a proper game with the Indian."
"They'd fight."
"Isn't that the whole idea?"
"They might hurt each other."
There was a pause, and then Patrick leant forward and asked, very slowly and loudly, "How can they hurt each other? They are made of plastic."
"Listen," said Omri, and then stopped and then started again. "The Indian isn't plastic. He's real."
Patrick heaved a deep, deep sigh and put the cowboy back in his pocket. He'd been friends with Omri for years, ever since they'd started school. They knew each other very well. Just as Patrick knew when Omri was lying, he also knew when he wasn't. The only trouble was that this was a non-lie he couldn't believe.
"I want to see him," he said.
Omri debated with himself. He somehow felt that if he didn't share his secret with Patrick, their friendship would be over. He didn't want that. And besides, the thrill of showing his Indian to someone else was something he could not do without for much longer.
"Okay, come on."
Going home, they broke the law even more, riding on the road and with Patrick on the crossbar. They went round the back way by the alley in case anyone happened to be looking out of a window. Omri said, "He wants a fire. I suppose we can't make one indoors."
"You could, on a tin plate, like for indoor fireworks," said Patrick.
Omri looked at him. "Let's collect some twigs."
Patrick picked up a twig about a foot long.
Omri laughed.
"That's no good. They've got to be tiny twigs, like this." And he picked some slivers off the privet hedge.
"Does he want the fire to cook on?" asked Patrick slowly.
"Yes." "Then that's no use. A fire made of those would burn out in a couple of seconds."
Omri hadn't thought of that.
"What you need," said Patrick, "is a little ball of tar. That burns for ages. And you could put the twigs on top to make it look like a real campfire."
"That's a brilliant idea."
"I know where they've been tarring a road, too," said Patrick.
"Come on, let's go."
"No."
"Why not?"
"I don't believe in him yet. I want to see."
"All right. But first I have to give this stuff to my dad."
There was a further delay when his father at first insisted on Omri filling the seed tray with compost and planting the seeds in it then and there. But when Omri gave him the corn seed as a present, he said,
"Well, thanks. Oh, all right. I can see you're bursting to get away. You can do the planting tomorrow before school."
Omri and Patrick rushed upstairs. At the top, Omri stopped cold. His bedroom door, which he always shut automatically, was wide open. And just inside, crouching side by side with their backs to him, were his brothers. They were so absolutely still that Omri knew they were watching something. He couldn't bear it. They had come into his room without his permission, and they had seen his Indian. Now they would tell everybody. His secret, his precious secret, his alone, to keep or share, was a secret no more. Something broke inside him, and he heard himself scream, "Get out of my room! Get out of my room!"
Both boys spun round.
"Shut up! You'll frighten him," said Adiel at once.
Guillaume came in to look for his rat, and he found it, and then he saw this absolutely fabulous little house you've made, and he called me in to look at it.
Omri looked at the floor. The seed tray, with the longhouse now nearly finished, had been moved into the centre of the room. It was that they had been looking at. A quick glance all round showed no sign of Indian or pony, but Guillaume's tame white rat was on his shoulder.
"I can't get over it," Adiel went on. "How on earth did you do it without using any airfix glue or anything? It's all done with tiny little threads and pegs and... Look, Guillaume, it's all made of real twigs and bark. It's absolutely terrific," he said, with such awestruck admiration in his voice that Omri felt ashamed.
I didn't," he began. But Patrick, who had been gaping at the longhouse in amazement, gave him a heavy nudge which nearly knocked him over.
Yes," said Omri. "Well, would you mind pushing off now? And take the rat. You're not to let him in here. This is my room, you know. And this is my magnifying glass, you know," echoed Guillaume. But he was obviously too overcome with admiration to be angry with Omri for pinching it. He was using it now to examine the fine details of the building.
"Well, I knew you were good at making things," he said, "but this is amazing. You must have fingers like a fairy to tie those witchy little knots."
"What's that?" he asked suddenly. They'd all heard it, a high, faint whinny coming from under the bed. Omri was galvanized into action. At all costs he must prevent their finding out now. He flung himself on his knees and pretended to grope under the bed.
"It's nothing, only that little clockwork dolphin I got in my Christmas stocking," he burbled. "I must have wound it up and it started clicking. You know how suddenly they do. They're quite creepy sometimes when they suddenly start clicking."
By this time he'd leapt up again and was almost pushing the two older boys out of the room.
"Why are you in such a hurry to get rid of us?" asked Guillaume suspiciously.
"Just go. You know you have to get out of my room when I ask you." He could hear the pony whinnying again, and it didn't sound a bit like the dolphin.
"That sounds just like a pony," said Adiel.
"Oh, beard, it's a pony, a tiny witchy pony under my bed," said Omri mockingly. At last they went, not without glancing back suspiciously several times, and Omri slammed the door, bolted it, and leaned against it with closed eyes.
"Is it a pony?" whispered Patrick. "Agog."
Omri nodded. Then he opened his eyes, lay down again, and peered under the bed.
"Give me that torch from the chest of drawers."
Patrick gave it to him and lay beside him. They peered together as the torch beam probed the darkness.
"Crumbs!" breathed Patrick reverently. "It's true!"
The pony was standing, seemingly alone, whinnying. When the torchlight hit him, he stopped and turned his head. Omri could see a pair of leggings behind him.
"It's all right, little bull. It's me," said Omri.
Slowly, a crest of feathers, then the top of a black head, then a pair of eyes appeared over the pony's back.
"Who they others?" he asked.
"My brothers. It's okay. They didn't see you."
"Little bull here, coming. Take pony. Run. Hide."
"Good. Come on out and meet my friend Patrick."
Little Bull jumped astride the pony and rode proudly out, wearing his new cloak and headdress. He gazed up imperiously at Patrick, who gazed back in wonder.
"Say something to him," whispered Omri. "Say how. That's what he's used to."
Patrick tried several times to say how, but his voice just came out as a squeak. Little Bull solemnly raised an arm in salute.
"Omri's friend, Little Bull's friend," he said magnanimously.
Patrick swallowed. His eyes seemed in danger of popping right out of his head. Little Bull waited politely, but when Patrick didn't speak, he rode over to the seed tray. The boys had brought it out from behind the crate. They'd been careful, but the ramp had got moved. Omri hurried to put it back, and Little Bull rode the pony up it, dismounted and tied it by its halter to the post he had driven into the compost. Then he went calmly on with his work on his longhouse, hanging the last few tiles. Patrick licked his lips, swallowed twice more, and croaked out,
He's real! He's a real, live Indian!"
"I told you."
"How did it happen?"
"Don't ask me. It's something to do with this cupboard, or maybe it's the key. It's very old. You lock plastic people inside and they come alive."
Patrick goggled at him.
"You mean it's not only him? You can do it with any toy.
Only plastic ones. An incredulous grin spread over Patrick's face.
Then what are we waiting for? Let's bring loads of things to life, whole armies!
And he sprang towards the biscuit tins. Omri grabbed him. No, wait, it's not so simple. Patrick, his hands already full of soldiers, was making for the cupboard.
Why not? Because they'd all... Don't you see, they'd be real.
Real? What do you mean?
Little Bull isn't a toy. He's a real man. He really lived. Maybe he's still a... Oh, I don't know. He's in the middle of his life. Somewhere in America in 17-something or other. He's from the past,
Omri struggled to explain as Patrick looked blank.
I don't get it. Listen, Little Bull has told me about his life. He's fought in wars and scalped people and grown stuff to eat, like marrows and stuff, and had a wife. She died. He doesn't know how he got here, but he thinks it's magic, and he accepts magic. He believes in it. He thinks I'm some kind of spirit or something.
What I mean, Omri persisted, as Patrick's eyes strayed longingly to the cupboard, is that if you put all those men in there, when they come to life, they'd be real men with real lives of their own, from their own times and countries, talking their own languages. You couldn't just set them up and make them do what you wanted them to. They'd do what they wanted to, or they might get terrified and run away, or... Well, one I tried it with, an old Indian, actually died of fright when he saw me. Look if you don't believe me.
And Omri opened the cupboard. There lay the body of the old chief, now made of plastic, but still unmistakably dead. Not dead the way some plastic soldiers are made to look dead, but the way real people look. Crumpled up, empty. Patrick picked it up, turning it in his hand. He'd put the soldiers down by now.
This isn't the one you bought at lunchtime.
Yes.
Crumbs.
You see? Where's his headdress? Little Bull took it. He says he's a chief now. It's made him even more bossy and difficult than before, said Omri, using a word his mother often used when he was insisting on having his own way.
Patrick put the dead Indian down hurriedly and wiped his hand on the seat of his jeans.
Maybe this isn't such fun as I thought.
Omri considered for a moment.
No, he agreed soberly. It's not fun.
They stared at Little Bull. He had finished the shell of the longhouse now. Taking off his headdress, he tucked it under his arm, stooped, and entered through the low doorway at one end. After a moment, he came out and looked up at Omri.
Little Bull hungry, he said. You get deer? Bear? Moose?
No, he scowled.
I say get. Why you not get?
The shops are shut. Besides, added Omri, thinking he sounded rather feeble, especially in front of Patrick, I'm not sure I like the idea of having bears shambling about my room, or of having them killed. I'll give you meat and a fire, and you can cook it, and that'll have to do.
Little Bull looked baffled for a moment. Then he swiftly put on the headdress and drew himself to his full height of 7 centimetres, nearly 8 with the feathers. He folded his arms and glared at Omri.
Little Bull, chief now! Chief, hunt, kill own meat, not take meat others kill. If not hunt, lose skill with bow. For today you give meat, tomorrow go shop. Get bear, plastic, make real. I hunt, not here, he added, looking up scornfully at the distant ceiling. Out, under sky, now, fire.
Patrick, who had been crouching, stood up. He, too, seemed to be under Little Bull's spell.
I'll go and get the tar, he said.
No, wait a minute, said Omri. I've got another idea. He ran downstairs. Fortunately, the living room was empty. In the coal scuttle beside the open fireplace was a packet of fire lighters. He broke a fairly large bit off one and wrapped it in a scrap of newspaper. Then he went to the kitchen. His mother was standing at the sink peeling apples. Omri hesitated, then went to the fridge.
"Don't eat now, Omri. It's nearly supper time."
"Just a tiny bit," he said.
There was a lovely chunk of raw meat on a plate.
Omri sniffed his fingers, wiped them hard on his sweater to get the stink of the firelighter off them, then took a big carving knife from the drawer and, with an anxious glance at his mother's back, began sawing a corner off the meat. Luckily it was steak and cut easily. Even so, he nearly had the whole plate off the fridge shelf and onto the floor before he cut his corner off. His mother swung round just as he closed the fridge door.
"A tiny bit of what?" she asked.
She often reacted late to things he said. "Nothing," he said, hiding the raw bit of meat in his hand. "Mum, could I borrow a tin plate?" "I haven't got such a thing." "Yes, you have, the one you bought Adiel to go camping." "That's in Adiel's room somewhere. I haven't got it."
"A tiny bit of what?"
But Omri was already on his way upstairs. Adiel was in his room, he would be, doing his homework. "What do you want?" he asked the second Omri crept in.
"That plate, you know, your camping one."
"Oh, that," said Adiel, going back to his French.
"Well, can I have it?"
"Yeah, I suppose so. It's over there somewhere." Omri found it eventually in an old knapsack, covered with disgusting bits of baked bean, dry and hard as cement. He hurried across to his own room. Whenever he'd been away from it for even a few minutes, he felt his heart beating in panic as he opened the door, for fear of what he might find, or not find. The burden of constant worry was beginning to wear him out. But all was as he had left it this time. Patrick was crouching near the seed tray. Little Bull was directing him to take the tops off several of the jars of poster paint, while he himself fashioned something almost too small to see.
"It's a paintbrush," whispered Patrick. "He cut a bit off his own hair, and he's tying it to a scrap of wood he found, about the size of a big splinter."
"Pour a bit of paint into the lid so he can reach to dip," said Omri. Meanwhile, he was scraping the dry beans off the plate with his nails. He took the fragment of firelighter and the privet twigs out of his pocket and arranged them in the centre of the plate. He washed the bit of meat in his bedside water glass. He'd had a wonderful idea for a spit to cook it on. From a flat box in which his first Meccano set had once been neatly laid out, but which was now in chaos, he took a rod, ready bent into a handle shape, and pushed this through the meat. Then, from small bits of Meccano, he quickly made a sort of stand for it to rest on, with legs each side of the fire, so that the meat hung over the middle of it.
"Let's light it now," said Patrick, who was getting very excited again.
"Little Bull, come and see your fire," said Omri. Little Bull looked up from his paints and then ran down the ramp, across the carpet, and vaulted onto the edge of the plate. Omri struck a match and lit the firelighter, which flared up at once with a bluish flame, engulfing the twigs and the meat at once. The twigs gave off a gratifying crackle while they lasted, but the firelighter gave off a very ungratifying stench, which made Little Bull wrinkle up his nose.
"Stink!" he cried. "Spoil meat!"
"No, it won't," Omri said. "Turn the handle of the spit, Little Bull."
Evidently he wasn't much used to spits, but he soon got the hang of it. The chunk of steak turned and turned in the flame, and soon lost its raw look and began to go grey and then brown. The good juicy smell of roasting beef began to compete with the reek of the firelighter.
"Mmm,"
said Little Bull appreciatively, turning the handle till the sweat ran off his face.
"Meat!"
He had thrown off his chief's cloak and his chest shone red. Patrick couldn't take his eyes off him.
"Please, Omri," he whispered. "Couldn't I have one? Couldn't I choose just one? A soldier or anything I liked, and make him come to life in your cupboard?"